Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk. And we are on April 9th here, and it teases us a little bit with the weather, but it was actually, there were some snowflakes in the air when I drove to the station today. So, and last week when Sunday I went out to do the pistol shoot, that morning it was snow all over the ground. Fortunately, it actually melted by the time that we started, but my wife had sent something on Facebook that had like the 12 seasons of Michigan, and it's like winter and fake winter and or fake spring, and I mean it's just really funny because it all boils down to you get one tiny bit of warmth in the summer, the rest of the time you're getting who knows what. So pretty funny. Let's see. Gun shows today. We have got Hesperia, the biggest little gun show in Hesperia. I didn't look that up. Derek, where is Hesperia, Michigan? Hesperia. Sounds like another UP place.
Yeah, I'll have to look it up here. I'm not exactly sure where it is.
Okay. While he's looking up Hesperia, let's see. Gaylord, two-day gun show, gun and knife show, and the Big Bear Sportsman's Club gun and knife show in Kaliva, Michigan, another place. Gosh, I should look these up before I get on the air. Then I could say, oh, yes, if you're just 12 miles from blah, blah, blah. So let's see. Go ahead, Derek.
Okay, so I found it. It's northeast of Muskegon. I'm not sure exactly how far, but It looks like about maybe an hour drive away.
Oh, well, that we can make it to there. Okay, that's pretty good. Now, Ohio, they always piss me off because Ohio has so many more than us. Let me run through these here. The Glenmont Gun Show in Glenmont, Ohio. The Miami Town Gun Show at the elementary school campus in Whitewater Township. The Columbus Gun Show. The Maumee Valley Gun Show in Bowling Green. The Brookfield Township Yankee Lake Gun Show. Lancaster Special Ops Show. Medina Gun Show and in Medina, Ohio, and the Cleveland Gun Show in Mentor, Ohio. I am embarrassed that they have three times as many gun shows as we have. This is, I think it has to do with our governor. Okay. Not really. By the way, did you guys see that the trial of the four people that were plotting to kidnap Whitmer, apparently? Two of them were acquitted and two of them have a hung jury. I did not anticipate that, so very interesting. Let's see. In Missouri, for our guys out in Jeff City and other places in Missouri, we've got the Hallsville Gun Show in Hallsville, Missouri, Christian County Gun Show in Nixa, Missouri, and the Seymour Gun and Knife Show in Seymour, Missouri. And in New York, we even got two, the Little Valley Fire Department, Volunteer Fire Department Sportsman Show in Little Valley, New York, and the Great Middletown Firearm and Knife Show in Middletown, New York. So that's pretty cool. Everybody's getting into the gun shows, except Michigan's only got a couple. It's just, you know, very disappointing. I don't expand it beyond. I'm going to drop New York off when Mike from Long Island moves from New York to Phoenix. When he does that, then we'll then we'll talk about Phoenix gun show, Phoenix area gun show. So, and actually, it would be so much fun to go out there. I was listening to some shows this weekend and listening to some guys talking about having gone to a gun sight and talked to a guy who went to, actually, it was interesting. this is not to promote myself or anything, but on Friday, yesterday, two times I was involved with an activity in Saline in the morning, volunteer activity in Saline. And as I was finishing up, I was talking to the guy that runs it, and he goes, "Oh, what's your name?" And I said, Dick Kupke. And he goes, Dick Kupke from the radio? And I said, yeah, yes, I'm on the radio. And he goes, oh, I listened to you. And so we talked for 45 more. I would have been done earlier, but I ended up spending 45 minutes talking to him about guns. And he'd been out to Front Sight out in Las Vegas and stuff. So, and we talked about guns for 45 minutes. And that's actually a short time for, that's not even a show's worth. I mean, I can normally, people go, Dick, how can you talk about guns for 2 hours straight on Saturday? And I go, I could talk about guns for 8 hours a day, 7 days a week. What are you talking about? And I think most of us are like that. So I noticed that when I was in various activities this week. Oh, then the other thing that happened yesterday is I'm in Sam's Club, okay? And I'm pushing one of those big, long, low carts because I got to go get a twin-sized mattress for my grandson. He's graduating into a big boy bed, and we're going to take it out to him today. So he's almost 4 years old. Probably could have been out of it a year ago, but he didn't fight the crib kind of thing. So I was out there picking up a new mattress for him, and a guy who I had been at Ford, he saw me, goes, Dick Kupke, oh, are you still doing the gun show? I need to talk to you. And we talked about what kind of guns he wanted to have and, for home defense and for potential carry, meaning so it would be a mid-size semi-automatic likely. And I said, well, send me an email. We'll talk about it. So, because we both, his wife was meeting him in the vegetables and I was ready to go. So we only talked for a few minutes. But I said, you know, this is actually kind of fun walking around and getting people. I had that happen at Walmart one time when I was at Walmart and I'm standing there in front of the ammunition. This back when they had ammunition and looking at things. And this guy was getting ready to go to a CPL course or something. And so he was buying some ammo. And I said, oh, well, you don't really need to have that. You can use this. And he goes, you sound familiar. Are you on the radio? And I go, yes. So that it's kind of fun, you know. So at any rate, let's see. The CPL numbers finally came in. On the 4th, today being the 9th, and we are at, where did it go? 779,737. That is up only 1,961, so almost 2,000, but we've still got 5,500 in a backlog, okay? And it's like, what the heck? Why are there 5,000 and 6,000 people in the pending category? Okay, now that I can blame on the governor and whatever her and the attorney general and people like that that are slowing down the process, okay? That shows that, so for this year, the last 12 months, we have added 36,139,000 new CPL holders in the last 6 months, okay? So that's new ones, not just renewals, because renewals, the number would stay the same, but this is new people. So that's still not a bad number, okay? But given that when we started out with the May issues back in, 2004, was it, something like that, there were only 36,000 total. Now we're up to 776,000. So that's pretty good. Let's see. I saw, did we get a call, Derek? Was there somebody who needed something?
She wanted to remain anonymous, so she asked me to send along the question.
Okay.
I sent it there in the chat screen if you want to read it.
Oh, jot, it says jot something down. It's,
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just go ahead and mention the question.
Okay, go ahead.
So this listener wanted to remain anonymous, and they wanted to know what is legally required to gift a gun that is being sent from Florida to Michigan.
That is being sent. Are we talking? I wonder if it's being, is it being shipped to? I mean, let me say this. If you are, let's say you're a snowbird, so you had a gun down in Florida. during the wintertime, and you flew back, but you're sending the gun to yourself, you can just pick it up because you can ship a gun to yourself, okay? And that could go to UPS or FedEx. You do have a requirement as a technically as a legal thing to to ship it by air. So it could be, you know, UPS Air, FedEx Air, something like that. If you are moving from Florida to Michigan, then what you would need to do is pick up the gun, but then you would have to register it in Michigan. So I'm not sure exactly what your, what flavor we've got here. Michigan has a handgun registry handgun license, let's say, so that and we're one of only 8 states that do. Maybe it's even less now. We'll have to see. But the thing is that when you get it, you have to have a permit to purchase. You have to register it with the local law enforcement agency. Like if you live in Pittsfield Township, you can go to Pittsfield Township. If you live in other places in Washtenaw County, you may be able to go to the Washtenaw County Sheriff, something like that. Or your Wayne County, I think. Wayne County, it's actually downtown in Detroit or something, and some of them were still using appointments only because of COVID, but I think that Washtenaw County is not. So I'm not sure exactly. It's okay if you remain anonymous, and you could even call in and clarify, but the thing is if it's a long gun, okay, then you can ship it to yourself. Or drive it back. If you're driving back, you don't need to do anything because the long guns are not registered in Michigan, nor are they officially registered anywhere in the country. Matter of fact, there's not supposed to be a firearm registry at all. There are some transactional kind of documents that take place when you buy it, like a 4473, which is a firearms, the NICS check form, but that stays with the gun dealer that you bought it, and the feds are not supposed to keep records of it. Now, I don't know if you believe that or not. I don't know it that, matter of fact, when it's interesting because I have heard stories, and these are not just stories, these are documented writers writing about things that took place, like in New Jersey and places like that, where a woman, an older woman, went and she went to get her buy a gun because she felt that she needed to have a gun, and her husband had a gun already, and she went to buy a gun, and she went to the police department, and the police department said, "Well, you don't need a gun; your husband's already got one." And she's like, "How do you know that?" Because they kept a record of things that they're not supposed to keep a record of. So it depends on the situation. If you're shipping it back to yourself and you already own it, you just pick it up. If it's something that you're buying, now let's say you're buying it from Florida. Maybe it's one of the companies down there that there's some big companies that import guns and stuff, and you are buying it. Then it needs to be shipped to an FFL, which is a federal firearms license dealer, like Ann Arbor Arms, the Firing Line, maybe I think the new T-Rex is a FFL as well, the Johnson's and Adrian, something like that, where they officially receive it, but you don't get it until you actually go through the NICS check process that you're buying it. Now, that's long gun or short, handgun. So it all depends on the situation. If you already own it, you're good to go. If you that's where people sometimes they even fly with their guns. And there are people go, "What?" And that I heard about that. The TSA found a lot of guns in people's luggage. Well, those are the people who aren't doing it correctly. When you do it correctly, you actually go to the ticket counter. You have the gun locked in a separate box, unloaded with no ammunition with it, and you show it to them. They look at the paperwork, you lock it, and it should be with a box and a lock that has a key that is not a TSA approved key, because they do not want the TSA people to have access to it. You're the only person that's supposed to have access to it. Now, they know that it's in the luggage, and that could be a little bit of a problem because occasionally there are unscrupulous baggage handlers and stuff who have rifled through and found, you know, they maybe see in an X-ray locked box inside, and they can guess what's inside it. But the point is that the lock on the box that carries the gun inside your luggage is supposed to be one that only you have the key for. And there's quite a few interesting, you know, locks that are made specifically for gun transport and stuff, that are these ones like Medico that are impossible to pick and stuff. Now, you can cut anything off eventually, whether you got a torch or a you know, a bandsaw or something like that, but it's meant to deter the theft in the airport and stuff. Good question. I'd like to know more about it. If you want to send your specifics to me, send it to dick@triggertalkradio.com. That's my email address. And then I'll respond to your specific situation, okay? So anyway, let's see. I want to talk about, we had a pin shoot last week, okay? And I had a fun time with the pin shoot. I've actually got a picture of it. I'm going to post it on my website because Jim Walter, who does the who runs the pin shoot, puts. And I don't know what, Derek, why this is not coming up on the. Let's take a look and see. Derek is sending a call screen message in to me here, and we'll see if it actually works this time. Yes, Tom from Detroit on gun registration. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I remember, and I think you were talking about it, back when Bill Schuette was Attorney General, he had an opinion that if the handgun was legally obtained, you know, without a purchase, it didn't have to be registered. I guess an example would be if, you know, if I was in Florida and I moved to Michigan and I owned a handgun, that technically, the way the statutes are written, it didn't have to be registered. Or perhaps somebody had a curio and relic license where, you know, they bought a handgun on their federal license without, you know, having to have a purchase permit, you know, then basically, do you recall anything about that, or if there's been any updates on that?
You know, I don't know, but I will look into that. And I'll write that down right now because I do know that I have that there is something. I do recall something in the back of my mind about if you move in that you don't – about not needing to register something. However, if there's any issue with that gun, then you would – and you have an unregistered handgun in Michigan, that could lead to a problem. I know that, like, when I inherited a gun one time from my grandfather, I went and I did the registration for it. But, of course, not for a long gun or anything, but just for a handgun. So I'm not sure. I will look into that, and that might be an interpretation that – if they actually did a real opinion and it was filed as an opinion, then that would still stand. Unless I wouldn't count on Dana Nessel not overturning that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, as I recall, it was an opinion and it was never tried in court. So,
yeah, and some of those things like that are you don't want to be the first one to have to defend yourself in court on that. You know what I mean? So, okay, Tom,
yeah,
I'll look into that for next week. I like my homework assignment. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Okay. So let's see. I was talking about, and by the way, on a way of homework assignments, I was going to talk about chamber reams. And I did find some interesting things. I didn't, I want to say in particular, chamber reams for .22 caliber, you can get as low as $50 from Amazon and $75 from Brown. Uh-oh. Derek, I think Tom went off, but then it never left. We got another one here, Greg from Weberville. Hi, Greg. How are you today?
I'd like to expound on your last caller.
Okay.
That Attorney General opinion is number 7304.
Okay.
And that deals with handgun, quote-unquote, registration, because technically what Michigan has is a handgun database. It's not a registration. Everybody defaults to that. And there is an exception to that. You go to MCL 28.432, section 1, paragraph F. And this is what I use, that a United States citizen holding a license to carry issued from another state is exempt from the quote-unquote registration.
Okay, but are you a Michigan resident now?
That's correct, yep.
And Michigan is one of the states, like many of the states, that have residency requirements on CPLs.
That's correct.
But you are also a resident of another state?
Nope. I have a permit to carry from the state of Arizona. And that...
Okay, that's interesting.
Yep. Yeah, 28.432 is the MCL, and
I'll look it up.
Look it up. Michigan Open Carry was at the spearhead of getting that issue cleared up with Bill Schuette.
Well, good.
Before he left office.
I will take a look at that and see, because I do know that, and actually everything is getting to be a can of worms now and actually we have the 25th state, Georgia, is preparing to sign
permitless carry.
Permitless or constitutional carry.
Yep.
And then that means the whole thing about, well, what if somebody's constitutional carry in their state so they don't need a permit? Can they still do this like Schuette opinion? Well, I guess you'd have to have a CPL from the other state. So that's why Ohio and some of these states, although they're allowing permitless carry, they also are offering CPLs just for that reason.
Sure, because that's just covers the reciprocity between other states.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So,
oh gosh,
it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But for the people that maybe are financially burdened and can't afford, the class and the fees, but, they still want to have that firearm lawfully on their person or in their vehicle.
Yep. Well, I know that's like South Dakota is not a permitless yet, but they just dropped their fees for CPLs to zero.
Yeah.
So that helps them with that issue. So then
that ain't going to happen in Michigan. Michigan State Police makes too much money off our permit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes,
hey, well,
they do.
Thank you for the call, Greg. I appreciate it.
Yeah, 28.432, section 1, paragraph F.
I'll add that to my list for next week.
All right.
Thank you
and
very much.
The Attorney General opinion is 7304.
Yep, I wrote it down. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, cool. See, isn't that great? That's the gun community here. When if I don't know something, and this happens all the time, somebody goes, "Well, where can we get a chamber reamer for a .22?" And somebody goes, "Oh, yeah, that's this guy has them over there, or somebody else is renting them." And by the way, I did get a clarification, or just a point of interest that the Shooter's Choice or Shooter's Services is on Middle Belt and 6 Mile. So that's the one I was talking about last week as being a potential place. But I did find some interesting things about reamers, and we'll talk about that in a bit. We're about out of time. We got 30 seconds left here. When we get back, we're going to talk about the pin shoot that I did last week and a rookie mistake. Well, it wasn't rookie from a pin shoot standpoint, but just a rookie mistake I made. And then I fixed it, and everything was hunky-dory after that. So at any rate, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Let's see. Women on Target. We've already talked about, and by the way, we're so happy that it's all sold out. People should still call and check because they are taking names, and we're talking about adding some women-only introductory or handgun classes as a result of the mass interest that we had, okay? So at any rate, we'll talk about that when we get back, including things about mounting scopes. That'll give you a hint to what my rookie mistake was. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 and 92.7 FM. We'll be right back.
Wham Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back, and we've got Roy from Ann Arbor about transporting a gun from Florida to Michigan. Hi, Roy. What was your experience?
Hey, good morning, Dick. I wanted to clarify for the listeners, it's kind of a complex, there's two sets of laws. You've got federal law, then you have state laws that come into play. So in the process, with respect to purchasing the firearm, it all comes down to residency as well. If you're a Florida resident and you purchase a firearm in Florida, if you want to transport that to Michigan, as you said, you can carry that yourself. If you want to go through the airlines, there's a process to do that. I've done that. It was pretty seamless.
Right.
Went to the ticket counter, told them, yes, I'm transporting a handgun. I had a Pelican brand case. I locked it in there. And then I locked it inside of my luggage. And that was seamless. Same thing on the way down.
Right.
Where it can be confusing for people is federal law says if I'm a Michigan resident visiting in Florida, I can't legally buy a handgun down there and take possession of it down there.
Right.
As you said, we would have to ship it back to an FFL in Michigan.
Yep.
Now, if I'm a Florida resident coming to Michigan, that's fine from a federal perspective. Then we have Michigan state law to contend with. And what Michigan state law says, if you're a Florida resident visiting in Michigan, you can only possess the handgun legally in Michigan if you have a license for that handgun from Florida or if you have a Florida resident concealed carry license.
Yeah, that sounds right. I'm trying to follow you in my mind here. Go ahead. It sounds right so far.
So I think the attorney general opinion that people were asking about, a previous caller was asking about, is it seems like almost like a quirk in Michigan law that says if you have an out-of-state concealed carry license and you're visiting in Michigan, you do not need to register your handgun in Michigan.
Well, that would be true because you're only visiting, right?
And
correct. And you've got your CPL, so you have reciprocity from most other states.
Yes, Michigan honors every other state's resident concealed carry license.
Mm-hmm.
So, to summarize, if you're a Florida resident visiting up here and you have a license for that handgun, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a concealed carry license, just you have to have the, not that any state really does this anymore, but if you have license from your state and you have it with you, then you can legally possess that in Michigan according to Michigan law. Or if you're from Florida, you have a Florida concealed carry license, you can legally possess it in Michigan.
Yeah, like if you're coming up from Florida and you got a cottage in northern Michigan and you keep a .22 in your tackle box as a kit gun, you're okay with that, right?
Because,
correct,
right, yes.
Right.
But if you're going to move to Michigan and establish residency in Michigan, you know, if you were a resident of Florida, you bought it in Florida, you've owned it in Florida, now you're moving to Michigan to stay in Michigan, be a resident in Michigan, now you have to either register it, or if you have a concealed carry license, then you do not have to register it. So it's kind of tricky there, but it boils down to what was your state of residency, and is it federal law versus Michigan law?
Yep. And you know, the other thing is like even if you don't have a CPL, let's say you're going from Florida to Michigan or Michigan to Florida, but you don't have a CPL. Now, I do, and I always carry, but whenever I'm traveling somewhere, and I make sure that I know that I'm going through states that honor my CPL. But even if they don't, there is the federal law that allows you that if you're legal where you own the or where you're going and where you're from and where you're going, you can legally transport a firearm through a state even if they don't recognize your CPL or whatever, but you have to follow the transportation laws, like unload it, lock it in or put it in a case and put it in the rearmost compartment of the vehicle, things like that.
Correct. Now there's two caveats there though. The question has come up, well, what if I stop for a meal in that state where it's not legal, where they don't honor my concealed carry license? Is that considered a temporary stop, or can that state call that your destination? Obviously, a rational person would say, well, that's not your destination. You just stopped for a meal. But that doesn't stop some states from being nasty and trying to prosecute you.
The other
side of the coin to be aware of is I've heard of people who were traveling through the state of New York, which is not friendly to firearm ownership, and for whatever reason, they got stuck in the state overnight. either they were flying through and there was their flight was diverted, or there's a snowstorm, whatever, and they had to stay overnight.
Boy, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Nasty about that.
Yeah, they, you know, what are you supposed to do? You've got it still. Now, you would bring it into your hotel room then, because you wouldn't want to leave it in your car, right? And or if it was in your luggage and you had an unexpected layover at LaGuardia or something like that, and yeah, they could get you on that, and they are not very friendly when it comes to that. Yeah,
correct.
And I agree.
That would fall under the category where they say the process is the punishment. Even if they know they cannot ultimately convict you, they're still trying to punish you for being a firearm owner.
Yeah, yeah. That's just terrible. Well, we need some nationwide laws like the Constitution or something like that that would oh geez, don't even. I'm going to talk about a little bit of politics, and so far we've avoided it today, but after this Sacramento shooting, and immediately Joe Biden came out and started calling for more gun control. We need assault weapons control and high capacity magazines and background checks, and you know what? It turned out to be a gang shooting with like four or five guys that were rivals, and by the way, it happened in California that has all of those things. You know what I mean? When it comes to the panacea of gun control land is California, and it still doesn't stop these gang, you know, these fights and gangland shootings, does it?
Correct. And what that shows is that there's credible reports. I forget if it's from the Federal Bureau of Investigation or if it's the Justice Department, but something like 80% of all violent crime are violent gangs attacking other violent gangs. So what we really have is a violent gang problem, not a firearm problem.
Absolutely. And by the way, given that they are gangs or drug cartels and stuff like that, they don't follow laws anyway. So just like when City of San Jose came out and said, all you gun owners are going to have an insurance policy. In reality, you know, drug gangs and gangs and stuff are not going to be, let me get out my insurance card here before we shoot you. So it's just ridiculous.
It is. I mean, if you close down one distribution channel, they will open another. That's what criminals do.
Yep. Well,
people are resourceful. They're very good at that.
Thank you for your call today, and thanks for being a listener. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. So I was going to give some discussion about there's the Chamber Reams, and he happened to ask about a chamber ream for a .22, which, by the way, there can be a lot of reasons that you might need that. It could be that with a .22, one of the reasons that you could have a problem is that if somebody dry fired that gun a lot. Okay. Now imagine this. So imagine that you're dry firing on an empty .22, you know, no round in the chamber. The bolt's closed, you're firing, the firing pin comes and it hits on the rim. It's not like a center fire where it's in the center of the chamber, it hits on the rim. And the rim itself can get a little dent in it from being hit so many times from that firing pin. And then you go to load, and that area where it's dented in can cause hot spot. But if you are having an issue with your .22 loading or extracting, take a look at the edge of your chamber and see if you've got a dent and look at your cartridges when you pull them out. And is there a bright, shiny spot where the firing pin would be that it pulls out and it's creating a great amount of interference with that shell? So you can fix those things with chamber reams and stuff like that. And I want to say I looked up chamber reams at places like Brownells and stuff. They're anywhere from $75 to $125. And if you're only going to use it once, that seems like an expensive thing. So there are companies around. There's one called 4D Reamer Rentals that Actually, they sell reamers for every caliber out there, okay? And they sell headspace gauges and all sorts of things. Give you an example here. They have, for a 22 long rifle, match grade chamber, meaning tight tolerances tight tolerances and well centered and all that kind of stuff. It has a headspace gauge set rental would be $8. Okay. Now that's just gauges. That's not the reamer itself. But the reamer, a solid pilot reamer, rents for $34. Or a floating pilot reamer rents for $38. Now, if you are one of these guys that shoots long range and shoots competitions and stuff like that, you may already want to have one of these reamers of your own, because you're swapping out barrels, you got multiple guns, things like that. But for somebody who only needs to use it once, renting a reamer for $34 or $38, that's saving you 75%, anywhere from 50 to 75%. So it's called 4D Rentals. And you can find these places by looking on a search engine and typing in chamber reamer rentals or 22 long rifle chamber reamer rentals. But look up the number four, the letter D, and then reamer rentals, and that'll help you there. So that was one of the homework assignments I had from last week, too. So I was talking about a rookie mistake, okay? So I had I went to the pin shoot, had a blast. We had, and actually it took longer to shoot the rounds because we had so many people. I don't know if it's because everybody that listened to Trigger Talk decided to go to the not everybody, because there are lots more than that, but we had 34 people sign up and shoot twice in two rounds, and which is essentially four tables worth. And so total of 69 paying rentals, and it was actually outstanding. Ton of people, and it was so much fun because a lot of people brought their kids. It is great to see kids at these events, because this is the kind of thing that this is what's going to save our gun culture and gun industry, is that it's becoming a family thing. There were women shooters and stuff. There were families there, and there were kids there. And so we'd shoot the pins and stuff. And then Mike Cowie, who's the kind of lead range guy there for that, he would say, okay, the range is cold, go down and set up the pins. And this whole horde of kids would run forward and set the pins back up again. It was so much fun to see. So what was my rookie mistake? I had a firearm that I had not shot in a pin shoot before. I've mentioned it, it's a Beretta CX4 Storm in 40 cal. Nice gun, beautiful gun. Pistol caliber carbine. And I had put a new optic on it, which is a Romeo 5 red dot, okay? And that's a reasonable priced red dot. It works super. It's got an instant on, so that you don't have to push any buttons. When you pick it up, it turns itself on. And I had just put that on it like the day before, and I did not get a chance to get out to the range to shoot it. So I went out and I used my bore sighter on it, a laser bore sighter, which is a laser that you put in the muzzle of the barrel and tighten it down so it centers itself. And then I set the target out 60 feet, 20 yards, which is what we were setting, you know, what we do at the pin shoots. And so I set the little reflective target out 60 feet. And, man, I zeroed that baby in just perfect. And I thought, this ought to be good enough to get me started, okay? And it is when you go. Typically, when you use a rifle like a bolt action or something, it'll get you on the paper, and then you go to the range and you sight in the optic, and you fire, you look, are you doing a consistent group, and then you move the the reticle to adjust the reticle to where the rifle is shooting. So so I go out and I go to shoot my first table, and I said, okay, I put this optic on, you know, 2 days ago, I haven't shot it yet. Well, what it doesn't take into consideration is the dynamics of the barrel, the gun, things like that. All these things make a difference on how an optic and a firearm interact, okay? But I thought, this would probably be, you know, close enough for horseshoes. And so, but I went to shoot the first table, and I went, oh, my God, I was missing terribly. And I asked Mike, I said, where am I shooting? I cannot see. And he said, you're shooting low and to the right. Okay. And so I tried to compensate because I didn't have time on my next tables to go over to the range next door and sight it in. So I tried to compensate by shooting high into the left. I wasn't doing very well at all. Really upset me. So in between my turns then to shoot, I went over to one of the other ranges next door to 60 feet, and I was shooting about 9 to 12 inches low, 9 to 10 inches low, and about 7 inches to the right. And so I came back and I resighted my optic in, came back and shot another round, and boom, right on. I was doing like 4.6 seconds, 5 seconds, you know, right where you want to be. Now, there are people there that are really, really good, and I hope to get good at this again because I haven't shot it that much, and especially that was only the first time I'd shot that gun like that. And some people do like 2.6 seconds for 5 pins. That's about as quick as you can go, 2 seconds, 2.6. I've had a 3.6 at one time with another gun, but I'm going to continue to work on it. But I'm thinking, what a rookie mistake. Here I am talking about, you know, optics and things like this all the time, and I really blow it, and I should have known, and I should have gone early and got set up and sighted in my optic before I went to do the competition. So consequently, I've got a thing I wanted to talk about today a little bit, was mounting the optic on your gun. Now, first of all, you got to recognize, oh, we got Theron on the line. Hey, Theron, how are you today?
Hey, first, I thought your rookie mistake was going to be a shot of kid.
Oh, no.
Good. It didn't happen. Hey, the reason I called is I'm probably behind the curve, but I want to let your listeners know, especially the ones that are, oh, man, I can't get you when I drive 2 miles that way. I bought over the weekend, it's called an Ocean Radio. It's a digital internet radio. It looks really cool. It's playing in my kitchen right now. It looks like one of those counter radios from the old days.
Okay.
And it picks up internet crystal clear, digital, better than FM. You can put Wham in, all sorts of other stations. $99.
Really?
Outstanding. You get it off of Amazon. I'm sure you can get them other places, but Amazon had the cheapest prices. It's called Ocean Internet Radio.
Neat.
Ocean as in the ocean. And they are outstanding. I would urge everybody to get one, no matter how you're listening anyway. It's horribly convenient.
Yep.
Set it on the counter, you go over, turn on, and bam, Wham comes right up if you got that one programmed in that you were listening to last.
I will have to look at that and get one of those. I've got something even that's very interesting. I don't know if a lot of my listeners, and I don't know about you, Theron, but I wear hearing aids, okay?
Me too.
Okay. And my hearing aids Bluetooth to my smartphone, my iPhone.
Right.
And so I can listen to tune in radio and stuff while I'm walking around the house with it Bluetoothing right
there
through.
And I haven't gone that far yet, but absolutely I have that capability as well.
Yeah, I'm going, oh gosh, this is just not to mention I can answer the phone by just touching my ear.
Right.
So I feel
soon
like
we're all going to have chips in our head.
I feel like the bionic man, you know. I know,
right here. Hey, so Ocean Internet Radio, that's the thing. And about carrying across the country, yeah, it is a daunting task, and I hate to say it, it sounds pessimistic, but we are no longer a republic, not even close. We're really not. We're an oligarchy. So I don't know that the Second Amendment is ever going to come full force in and sandblast all these illegal laws off of America. I don't know. But right now, we're in dire straits with this new chick that's been put on the Supreme Court as well.
Yeah, well, yeah. No, she's not a... I'm not a biologist, but I don't know if she's a woman or not, right?
Well, she's got the right plumbing, and she could technically enter a wet T-shirt contest.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so, well, then that might...
win,
that,
you never know. No,
but that would not have been how she describes a woman, would it?
All right, I'll let you go. But, hey, do check it out, Ocean Internet Radio.
I absolutely will. Thanks, sir.
All right, and they got a bunch of cool models. Okay, I'll talk to you later. Thanks.
Okay, yep, bye. I like the old radios for that are sitting on a counter. I've got a couple of them, and I've actually got a modern one called a Crosley, which is got a nice sound to it and stuff, but it is still, a tuned radio, and it picks up interference and stuff like that. I would like to, and that's why I like using my iPhone with my hearing aids. But, man, that sounds good. I'm writing it down right now. Ocean Internet Radio. And actually, I've used I don't know if they're related or not. I actually use some software sometimes when I'm on the road if I'm having to pre-record a show. Let's say I happen to be I did this before. I did it at I was in Hawaii, okay, and I broadcast a show from there, but I didn't. With the time zone and stuff, I would have been up like 6 o'clock in the morning. So I said, no way. So I didn't have some good software on the laptop. It was a new laptop. And I downloaded something called Ocean Audio, and I used it to make my files and send them back to Derek. So I don't know if that's related, but Ocean Internet Radio is what Theron is recommending here. So that's cool. You know, why don't they build that all into the cars and all that kind of stuff? I don't think they do have... well, they tried to do, XM and Sirius and stuff like that, but that was okay if you had a new car and you got it for a year for free or 6 months for free. But then they start wanting you to pay $20 a month or something for radio, and it's like, come on, hey, it's supposed to be free through the airwaves there. So, at any rate, I was, first of all, talking about mounting a scope. Okay, there's a couple of things you need to think about, and what you're mounting it on and what it is that you're mounting are important to determine. I just realized I've only got 2 minutes left, so I'm not going to be able to get into this. But we're going to talk about this in the second hour. We'll talk about the steps of mounting a scope, the things to consider. And people use the term scope, okay? But we should be using the term optic, because in the old days, a scope was a telescope, a telescopic scope, okay? And it usually was like a four-power scope. I've got several of these old four-power weavers and stuff that were really cool, but they're not near as good as they are now. But then there were the variable ones like a 3x9 or a 1.5x7, 2x7, something like that. So you got to think about what you're going to use it for. You need to think about the quality of it. And then you also have to think about the quality of the mount, okay? Because there are different ways that scopes mount, in particular on rifles, bigger rifles. Smaller rifles, they used to always just use what they called rimfire dovetails, okay? And it was like little tracks in the top of the receiver that it would clamp on. But then they realized, that's not all that great. Maybe for a .22, but it's not good for big guns, and it's not even that great for .22s. So we'll talk about all of that, and also there's a thing called a 20 MOA. What is that? Well, we'll talk about it in a few minutes, because they're all things that you need to think about when you are mounting an optic, whether it's a one with crosshairs and stuff, or whether it's ones with red dots and illumination. There's even ones that have laser rangefinders built right into them, and they adjust the reticle up or down depending on how far the target away is. How cool is that? This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 and 92.7 FM. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to Trigger Talk. And, boy, we got lots to talk about today. Man, I was just... There's not enough time. We don't want longer breaks in between segments. But I had fun. I was stepping out into the hallway to use the facilities and ran into Ed Hoffman there. And I wanted to tell him, and I don't know if you guys, our Saturday lineup is so much fun. With Trigger Talk, these are our local hosts, and we have some great syndicated hosts too. I really listened to show right before me, the one with Soledad O'Brien and stuff. That it's the one that used to be the guys from Financial Engines, and it still is, but they've modified the show slightly. But they were talking about some things that affected me over the last couple of years. And it's interesting because I'm just transitioning into Medicare now, which is never something that you look forward to because the government runs it. But so far it's been okay. I don't actually transition till the first of next month, but the prep has been going okay. And so I listen to that, and then there's my show, and then there's Ed Bondarenko's show and Pastor Rick. And then the one I want to mention is Ed Hoffman's show, because if you don't – you have to take a look and appreciate the depth and breadth of his show. And this came up this week, and that's what I just stopped off to talk to him, because I had mentioned earlier in the show where I ran into a guy yesterday, and he goes, I introduced myself, and he goes, from the radio? Yeah, we talked about guns. But he also talked about Ed's show. He goes, man, and that guy, because he asked me, the first thing he asked me is, do you know Theron? I said, yeah, I know Theron. And I explained the relationship and stuff. And then he goes, and the guy who does the art show, I love his show. It's got so many different things and stuff. And I'm just mentioning that because Ed did a show, was it 2 weeks ago? I think it was 2 weeks ago, where he had, I think it was 2 weeks ago. Ed, why don't you come on in over here a second? Yeah, can you hear me? Yeah. Ed is sitting in the studio next to me right now, and let's see if he can come and pull him up on mic two. Come on in. And I was just telling people about the story that happened to me yesterday. Go ahead and pull that mic up there. It's going to make noise on that probably, but. I ran into somebody who just loves your show.
Oh, Dick, thank you very, very much. Hello to you and hello to your wonderful audience. I mean, it's nice to have feedback like that, you know?
And I want to mention something, because I was really looking forward to, it was 2 weeks ago, wasn't it, when you talked to Marta?
Yeah.
And Ed had, now... Of all the, and I want to say that the depth and breadth that, like I said, of Ed's show is so much, so wide, you've got to understand it. But when he says Marta Kristen, okay, to me, as a 65-year-old man, I'm going, oh my God, Judy from Lost in Space. I love Judy from Lost in Space. And Ed did a, interview live with Marta, didn't you?
I did. It's funny, Dick. I mean, that response, what you just described, is something that has been enunciated by most of the people who know about that show. Yeah. I mean, it is from people of our generation, and quite frankly, from the generation since, because the show's never been off the air.
Right.
And there's like a whole new generation all the time. But for us, it was a great show. For those of us who were a little too young for Star Trek, mm-hmm. Lost in Space was it. And listen to the sound effects. The sets often were absolutely, especially early in the show, it was black and white. And you had a very, very serious Swiss Family Robinson trying to eke it out, in space. It really worked. And, she was so – I mentioned this to her. And as I said, I'm hoping she's going to be back in a couple of weeks. She said that she'd like to return. But we talked about a lot of other things, cultural things. But I think there are a few very specific Lost in Space questions that I did not ask that I would like to add, particularly her very good friendship with Jonathan Harris.
Yeah.
Who is an a consummate actor, by the way.
Oh, the really, pain, the pain.
when you know the background to all that and what he put into that and what he did to become an actor, his story alone is absolutely fascinating. Yeah. But anyway, just Judy, people just recognize and say, you know what? I absolutely loved her. She must have been the first TV crush on about, who knows, millions.
Well, there's so many of us of this age right now. We're that bubble going through, right? The baby boom bubble going through. Yeah. And you were like a little bit young for Judy, but you went, oh, my God. And then you also get, oh, well, Penny was pretty cute, too. So, but, you know, the guy that I ran into yesterday and he brought you up, he hadn't heard the Marta show. He just loves your show in general. So I just want to say that's why I wanted you to come on over, because it's a delight to have this lineup that we have here. I mean, we go from talking about guns and politics and stuff like that to the arts and music. And I explained to him, I said, you grew up on the East Coast and you worked with antiquities for a long time and stuff like that. And so so it's really fun having you here. So.
I was thinking of you yesterday, Dick. I was reading a fabulous book that was published in 1876. It's called, a brief thing is, A Narrative of Travel and Sport Through Burma, Siam, and the Malay. And it was written by one of these sort of British explorer hunters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually they were ex-military people who would get together an expedition, a hunting expedition with friends, and they would go out. And this fellow's descriptions of the endless forests of then Siam, Thailand, mm-hmm. Burma, and then going into the Malay Peninsula is absolutely incredible. I mean, the language, the descriptions of forests with 200-foot high trees, talking about the guns and everything that they needed to bring with them.
Right.
And just the arduousness of the journey, the preparations, and the people coming across an abandoned huge pagoda complex with the walls falling down because of overgrowth and banyan trees growing up out of it. It was absolutely fantastic. And I thought of you because they were talking about the
firearms of the big game hunting and stuff like that.
Breech loading and everything that they would bring with them.
Wow.
It's incredible that type of the mixture of beautiful landscape of travel, exploration and hunting.
You know, I've threatened at some point to talk about the art of firearms when you get to the beauty of some of the old designs and the scroll work that was on them, the lock work on they could have made just a shape to hold the flint, but they've got it all scrolly and it looks like a dragon's head and it's the woodwork that goes into them and the brass and stuff like that. You can find art everywhere you look, can't you?
You can. You remind me of something about 20 years ago when I first became associated with Schmitz Antiques. I was with them for about 10 years, and I'd been with the auction business in Washington, as you know. We had a side-by-side shotgun that I think dated from about 1890, 1895, and that had beautiful incised brass inlay work.
Okay.
Scrolling and a little bit of a landscape on, I don't know what you call it, but toward the stock on the barrel at the very beginning.
Okay.
That's where most of the
on
decoration
the forestock
was.
Up there.
On the forestock, kind of like a tattoo. But it was so beautifully done. That was the best gun in the whole thing. And there must have been three deep around people
looking
to be able
it.
To look at that before it came up on the block. Yeah. That was, since I've been here in Michigan, the outstanding firearm, that shotgun, I'll say, that I have seen.
Well, that is so neat. And I appreciate you coming over and
taking
a few minutes to come over here.
Thank you.
And it's just an example to we will have to get together and collaborate on something for firearms and artwork and history at some point, don't you think?
I want to thank you again on the air for helping with my 22.
Oh, sure.
Everybody, this old 22, this was it, Mossberg, about 1950 or something, my dad gave me when I was 12 years old, living on the shore in New Jersey. I hadn't fired it in years. Dick looked at that the way I would look at a box of old books on a curb or something. Oh, my God, that has to be saved. You took that and restored that to perfection. And I just want to thank you for that.
Oh, yeah. Well, wonderful. We still haven't gotten around to shooting it, but we will
Let's
one of these
it.
Days.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Dick, thank you so
okay.
much.
See you, Ed. Yep. So that's why you got to, when you listen to Ram, I always say you just got to take the buttons and the tuning knobs off your radio and throw them away, because you just need to be set up to Wham, and you can go from guns to, well, from financial stuff. Actually, we have a show in the morning, starts out, I think it's called the Wisconsin Seed Show or something like that, where they talk about gardening. You can get it all at Wham right here. So that's about as much of a plug for the station I'll do today. But I got to tell you, this is a great place to while you're working on things and stuff like that, to be able to just turn on a radio, have it in the background, because you never know what you're going to hear, and you will enjoy these things. We've got Ed from Ypsilanti on, and speaking of hosts, we got Ed from Ypsilanti on a Mossberg 22. Hi, Ed.
Hi, here I am trying to do show prep, and you keep coming up with interesting stuff. Doggone it.
That's the plan.
Was that a,
part
was
of
that
my
a single
evil
shot,
plan.
Mossberg 22 you worked on for Ed?
Yep. What?
I had one of those.
Oh, yeah?
It's hilarious. Yeah. I found one. We lived out in the country, and we had a water softener. And I always wondered where this gun went. My dad had given it to me to shoot. When we were little kids, we'd go out and shoot it, blink with it. And one day I saw it hanging on nails up in the closet in the garage where we kept the water softener.
Really?
And you can just imagine what all that salt in that room
oh,
did.
No. It grew its own culture of rust on there?
Oh, my goodness. But, yeah, but, you know, I asked them, can I take this down and clean it? And I took it all apart, and I sanded it and wire, you know, steel wool. And my uncle, my dad didn't know about bluing, but my uncle helped me blue it.
Nice.
And I did woodwork on the stock, and I was so proud of that gun when I got done with it, because I had invested that time and effort into it.
Yep. Now, do you still have it?
No, I don't, because Mom took it and threw it away or hit it or something.
Oh,
she also went on an anti-gun bent.
Oh, see, that's a shame when that – because what happens is the firearms are part of your life. I mentioned, I think last week I did a – and I'm not going to show a picture anywhere, but I had all my long guns out on the ping pong table, okay? And I had all the I had, you know, these old Remingtons that I shot when I was a kid and stuff like that. And they're all part of your upbringing and your history. And I know which kid is going to get which gun, and they're going to be able to talk about that was great, great, great grandpa's gun. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, good show.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Thanks, Ed. Talk
Thanks.
To you later.
Bye.
Bye. Let's see. And by the way, the other thing I needed more time at the break for was I'm looking right now at Ocean Digital Wi-Fi radios. So, man, oh, Theron, thanks for spending my money for me here. I'm just going to have to get one of these. Matter of fact, they got one that's got, it can be an alarm clock, and it has two speakers. Wow, look at that. Oh, yeah. I'm not going to be able to sneak that onto the nightstand without Trish knowing it, so I better think that'll just be out in my barn or in the garage, okay? So, at any rate, let me get back to what I was going to talk about. And we were going to talk about the rifles and the optics. And there's so many kinds. People always thought about optics or scopes as being rifle scopes, telescopes. And actually, they're outstanding. There are so many good quality ones, and they have so many features. The magnification levels are so much better. One of the things that you, when people talk about telescopic sights, okay, there was a pretty much of a rule of thumb that we always said. You should pay as much for your scope as you pay for the gun, okay? So if you're buying a $500 rifle, you should plan on having a $500 scope. Well, why is that? They've got them for down at what's the company? I'm just trying to remember. But they've got them over at Walmart for $39. I can get one for $39. Why should I do that? Well, because there's a huge difference in the glass, okay, and the mechanisms and the coatings and stuff like that. In particular, the glass and the coatings of the glass are what makes a they're in the old days, they didn't have that. Some of these old Weaver K4s and stuff like that, you look through, and it's like you're looking through a, first of all, like a Coke bottle bottom. You know, it's kind of got all sorts of aberrations around the edge. It's got, you know, it looks wavy, and it's dark, okay? And it's dark around the edges, and it's only bright in the middle. And even at that, it's only a little lighter than the outside, okay? Well, nowadays, the lenses, thanks to modern aspherical designs and stuff, where a lens just isn't a curve. The lens may have a curve that, a concave that becomes a an outside, what is that? That's I forget. But at any rate, the point is that they are compounds of surfaces, okay? And the inside surface doesn't necessarily match the outside surface because they're trying to correct for different things and improve light gathering. So when you hear somebody talk about triple-coated lenses or multichromic lenses and stuff like that, those are ones that have a coating on it that helps prevent the light that comes through from dispersing. And so what happens is that you can get a good scope now that may have 99% light of transmission efficiency, so that I've got some scopes, some loopholes and stuff that when I pick up the rifle and look through it, it could be, you know, dusk out, and it looks like the afternoon because it's got superior light gathering, okay? So the first thing is you want to buy a quality scope. Then you have to buy a quality mount. And I want to say there are a lot of companies that make good mounts. There are Leupold makes good mounts. Warn makes good mounts. Burris makes some good tactical mounts and things like that. Don't go buying, here's the company I was thinking of, Tasco. Why would I want to spend $100 on a set of rings or a mount when I can go buy them for $11 and buy a set of Tasco aluminum ones that are lightweight from Walmart? Well, because you are going to be imparting a lot of recoil and forces into that mount, and you want it to stay exactly where you have mounted it, okay? So what you do, and you need to think about the magnification levels of the scope that you're going to get. For example, I have different ones on some long range rifles. I have like a 6 power to 24 power. On some medium range rifles, I may have a 3x9. And on some rifles that I use for deer hunting that is fairly close, I might have a 1.5 to 7 or a 2 to 7 or something like that. Because you got to figure out what you're going to be looking at. If you're going to be at short range with hunting, you don't want something that is over magnified. How many times have you picked up a pair of binoculars and looked through them and you got to sweep around a little bit to find out what you want to look at? Well, you can't do that when you're hunting, okay? You need to pick up the rifle, and you're pointing the rifle instinctively, and you've got to have a wide enough, meaning low enough magnification, that you get enough field of vision to be able to see what you're going to shoot, okay? Now, then you can dial it down if you need to. If you're shooting at something at 300 or 400 yards, you may need to dial it in. But if you're at 75 yards, you can keep it at a lower magnification. And by the way, let's say you're going to shoot a long-range target. There are guys out there that will shoot nowadays anything from 800 to 2,000 yards. I mean, there are people that will shoot a half mile to almost a mile. Do you know what kind of holdover you have to have? Well, that's why they have different mounts for these guns that are called, like, even out to 1,000 yards, they call it 20-minute of angle. And what that is that it actually builds into the scope an angle so that the gun and the scope, imagine this, if you're shooting something that is 600 or 800 yards away, you may need to, depending on what round it is and stuff like that, you may need to have enough of a holdover to meaning that you've got to raise the gun up because it's got a trajectory, a ballistic trajectory. You may need to hold over on that target 50 inches, okay, 36 inches, whatever the case may be. Well, you may run out of adjustment in your reticle for adjusting for up or down for that. So they have to make mounts that accommodate that. So that's why you really need to tailor your mount to the gun that you are and the purpose that you're going to do. Long range guns use 20 and 30 minute of angle mounts for their scopes. If you're shorter range, you have a 0 minute of angle. It's just no internal adjustment, okay? You want to make sure that, and by the way, again, I mentioned that the rimfire has these little dovetails cut in them that they just clamp on. Well, that may work okay for rimfire, but in reality, you're better off with a mount that screws on, and they call that drilling and tapping. Now, it could be that your gun comes with 4 bolt holes, 2 in front of the chamber opening and 2 behind, and you can buy a rail that will go on there, and it'll be one piece, and it goes right across the opening, and you can clamp onto it. They call that a Picatinny rail. They also call it a Weaver rail on some cases. It's slightly different. But you also there are also ones that are 2 pieces. Those are okay, too. A loophole mount typically has a swivel. You put the scope on like 90 degrees, and then you swivel it around, and then you attach it in the back. It's pretty neat. But you need to buy the highest quality one that you can afford. And I want to say it's almost virtually always. Now, your gun is made out of steel. Okay, so you want to have, and your rings should be made out of steel. So if you're going to be putting a rail on there, you should have that made out of steel. And I've got a Remington 700, 700 PSS that is in 308, and it's for long range. And I put a Badger Ordnance rail on there. And the rail, just the little rail, cost $120, okay? It's not unusual for these high-quality parts to cost more money. But if you're going to be shooting precision, and it's important to you that you're either going to be hitting the target, meaning paper or a gong or whatever you are, at 1,000 yards you want to hit a gong, okay? Or if you want to be able to hit an animal and hit it humanely and have a one-shot kill, then that precision is important to you. Okay, so you make sure that it's clean. You take off any. I want to say there if there's anything on the bottom of the rail or anything like that. Sometimes, you know, if there's a sticker or oil or something, you want to make sure it's clean. Same thing on the inside of the rings. You want to take off any tape. Sometimes people put tape on thinking that'll be a good friction enhancer in there. No, you take that all off. You clean everything up. Okay, then what you do is you put your rings on, and one of the things that people always talk about is you can get like a ring, a bar that is either 1-inch or 30-millimeter bar that you can lay in, and it will align your rings, okay? You can do that with the scope itself, but you got to be more careful because the scope bodies are normally aluminum, okay? So, gosh, I only got halfway through this discussion. We'll talk more about installing the scopes and torquing it down when we get back. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio at Wham Talk 1600. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Wham Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
We're back, and we were just talking about mounting a scope. Gosh, I got so many other stories to get to, but this is worth talking about. Setting the scope, you need to set the your rings on, and but you do not tighten the rings down yet until you actually can set the scope on top of them, because imagine you've got these two half circles that you're setting the scope in. Now, it's a little bit different if you're using a red dot and things like that, because that's a much shorter distance. They usually come with a mount, a Picatinny mount and rail. And so some of these things apply to other types of optics, like an ACOG, a red dot, things like that. But I'm talking specifically about scopes now. So what you do is you then, and this is important, you then tighten down the bottom half, and what you do is you put the cap on, and then you loosely tighten the screws on the cap. So what should happen is that you've got essentially rings themselves are mounted, the cap on the rings are loosely mounted, but only like one turn or so that you can move that scope fore and aft in those rings. Because what you want to be able to do is when you pick up that rifle and you are looking through that, I'm in the studio holding my imaginary rifle here, and you're looking through that front optic like that, you should be seeing the entire picture, okay? What happens is if you are, if it's dark or if it's like a little peephole and you can't see, you might move your head fore or aft and you go, oh, there's the perfect spot I see, that's fine. But that is not where you want to be. You don't want to have that thing so that you lift up the optic in the rifle and you've got to adjust your head. It should be the other way around. It should be the optic should be absolutely in the perfect spot that when you mount your rifle, your cheek is touching the comb of the stock so that you have a little bit of something to be able to rest your head on and make sure that your head is in the same position, and that scope should be the perfect distance from your eye. They call that eye relief. It can be anywhere from 2.5 inches to 3/4 inches or something, depending on the scope and the size of the optic and stuff like that. However, what you do is you move that scope back and forth in those rings until when you pick up that rifle, it's in the perfect spot. Okay, no adjusting your head. And you can check that by, okay, you think you got it just right? Close your eyes. Hold the gun down low. Pick the gun up and put it on your shoulder. And you're looking through it and you go, nope, I'm having to lean forward. I don't want to do that. So then you bring the scope back a little bit. And you do that until about 5 or 6 times in a row when you pick up that gun and shoulder it properly. It's called mounting the rifle, okay? When you pick up that gun and look through, your eye is perfect in that scope each time. Then you're ready to tighten them down, okay? Now, what you need to be able to do, and I want to say you should have an inch-pound torque wrench. And they make these. They're not all that expensive. You can get them. But when you tighten down the fasteners on a scope, on the mounts, on the rings, on all that kind of stuff. It's like, you know, how many people, when you go to change a tire, people go, well, you do a crisscross pattern on it. How many of you people know why? Okay. It's because if you are tightening down, like if you go put a tire or a wheel on your car and you take the first nut and put it on and tighten it all the way down, then that wheel might not be properly centered on the axle, on the hub. The wheel has a hub and a center on it that fit together, and you might not have it perfect, okay? So what you do is you run them down. You like go through and you do a crisscross pattern on them. You know, like if you're doing a star on a 5 or a 6, five or six lug wheel, okay, and then you tighten it down to like 25%, and then 50%, and then 70%, and then 100% of what it's supposed to be. Now, by the way, those you typically don't need to, I want to say you don't need to put a Loctite on them, but the ones on the rings and the ones on the rail to the gun, you should use Loctite. Okay, now there's actually a product called Guntite, and it's in a green tube, but there's also Loctite products. What you want to make sure is that you get a Loctite product, and that's why Guntite is the one I recommend. And it's in a white tube with green lettering on it. It's called Guntite. And what it does is you put it on the threads, and then when you tighten it down and torque it properly, that it's like a little glue, not really glue, but it's a chemical in there that will dry, and it will lock the screws so that it doesn't back out, but not so tight that you can't take it out if you need to. If you have to take the mount off to do something, you have to take the scope off to have it serviced or something like that, you don't want, you know, it's like actually on a car, you can get red Loctite and you can get blue Loctite and you can get orange Loctite, okay? And there are ones that you can only get off by using heat and air tools. Okay, well, you don't want to have to do that on your, you know, no, let me get a blowtorch out here and take my rings off my gun. You can't do that. So you got to make sure you use the correct product to mount the rings and to use as the Loctite so that it is serviceable. Okay, and like I said, Guntite is a good choice to use. Okay, let's see. I almost made it all the way through. I just went down. Oh well, I'll skip this next article because how depressing! It just brought up I scrolled down on my screen and I get a picture of Joe Biden here, and I already mentioned. He was one of the guys that jumped online and said, we need more gun control after this Sacramento shooting, this mass shooting out there. Well, no, we need more gun gang control. We need more drug gang control. There isn't a single thing in gun control that you would do short of, actually, you could confiscate every gun. And you could get everybody to turn in all their guns. Now, do you think the bad guys will turn in their guns? No. Okay, do you think you could make any laws that these bad guys, these five guys or four guys, were getting in an argument in a fight and at 2 o'clock in the morning, and remember, nothing good ever happens after midnight, right? At least outside the home, maybe inside the home, but nothing good ever happens after midnight. 2 in the morning, they're exiting a bar, they're fighting, and they're shooting each other. What law would you make that would stop that? Okay, would gun registrations do it? No, they probably weren't registered anyway. By the way, one of the guys got charged with having a, quote, machine gun. Do you know they're importing these things from China that they're calling Glock switches? And it goes on the back of the Sear, and it supposedly allows it to fire fully automatic. I can't imagine anything more useless than a fully automatic 9mm Glock as far as control-wise and stuff, which is why when there's 100 rounds out there, they only shot 12 people, okay, because you can't control something like that. But, by the way, they're not legal to have. That didn't stop him. Well, what about handgun registration? No, they're not registered. What about a modern sporting rifle? No, assault weapon bans. Nope, that's not what they used. Okay, what about background checks? Nope, doesn't account for them because they're criminals. They don't do background checks. So I want to say the whole thing, now they're all quiet. Okay, by the way, it's a demographic that it's a gang out there that they don't want to offend that demographic, okay? So at any rate, here's an interesting story getting off that. Now my blood pressure's up. Boy, and I got to go get blood tomorrow, so I got to make sure I relax today. Let's see. There is an online gun or an online dating service or app or something. I don't know about those. I don't need to know about those. But there's one called OkCupid. Okay? And it's funny because it used to be that one of the things that was kind of like a turnoff on participants on this OkCupid app was gun ownership. Okay. Now it's not anymore. Now it's climate change skepticism is their biggest turnoff. Oh, that's fine. That would be a good way to help avoid who you want to date with, because if their turnoff is climate change skepticism, then you can go, well, I don't want to date this green weenie out here. So at any rate, but now they're now no longer are guns an issue for online dating. Apparently, in the last several years, last few years, it's perfectly fine with people. Yeah, you have guns? Yeah, I'm okay with guns. I like guns too. So... Isn't that funny how things change? Okay, but climate denial is something that they really don't like. You know, the woke half there. Matter of fact, some of the women are saying that they would actually rather date. And there's a picture of one here where she's holding a shotgun, and she goes, "Oh, this is better protection than any pacifist male." You know, all the little. Soy boy. Speaking of that, I was going to say I saw David Hogg was in. I call him Praying Mantis Boy because his head is shaped like a praying mantis. You ever notice that, David Hogg? He's got this triangle shaped head. Now he tried to grow a beard to hide it a little bit, but he's out there still. He tried to come up with a pillow company. To be against the MyPillow company, but that didn't work out for him. I guess you can't just declare you're going to be the best pillow company out there and have people flock to you with you know, financing and incentives. So at any rate, let's see. So yep, definitely a shotgun is better protection than a pacifist male. Let's see, bow and arrow. A Muskogee, Oklahoma man who broke into a home Saturday night, was shot and killed by a resident armed with a bow and arrow. Huh. Well, it turns out that the guys actually, I want to say these guys lived in the same duplex. Apparently, they had a running beef going about something. And because the other residents in this duplex said that, oh, yeah, these guys don't get along. And this guy started trying to harass this other guy, and he'd come over and harass and knock on the doors and windows, and then he'd call the cops. The cops had been there numerous times and, you know, warned the guy, stay away. Well, this guy actually came and tried to break into the guy's house, broke out his patio window in the back. And the homeowner... who also, now by interesting, the guy could not have a firearm because he was a criminal. Both of them had criminal backgrounds, okay? So the guy that broke in through the patio window and the guy that lived in the home both had criminal backgrounds, but at least the guy that lived in the home knew that he was not allowed to have a firearm, so he didn't have a firearm. He had a crossbow. Okay, actually, he had a compound bow. So what happened is the guy broke in and he took him out with a compound bow. I got to say, holy cowboys and Indians, Batman, this is like the old days. But, you know, actually, you ever see some of the, what was the name of that? There was a post-apocalyptic show that was on TV 10 years ago or so, and it was something about how the electrical grid was knocked down and they were trying to restore civilization. And this one woman was running around with a crossbow all the time. Wow, that sounds outstanding. And they said, you know, ammunition prices are, you can thwart your ammunition prices by having a crossbow, but you just have to be able to go back and retrieve your arrow, okay? Or push it the rest of the way through, depending on what happened. Maybe just go pick it up from behind. You take a crossbolt bow with a hunting dart on it or a or a compound bow with a hunting arrow on it, it's probably going to go through. Okay, so you just walk behind your target and pick it up. Put it back in your quiver there, right? Let's see. Here's another thing that I was reading about. And when I was doing some inventories and some loading of some things and stuff, I was paying attention to magazines that, you know, a lot of guys will take and they put a coupler on a magazine, okay? Like if they have an AR-15, they will actually, there's two kinds of couplers. There's ones where guys put them where they're bottom to bottom so that you flip them over, but that makes them too long. So they actually, with the popular ones now, are a coupler between two mags. So imagine you're holding two 30-round mags in front of you, and let's say that you take your left hand and you put it up about a third of the way, and then you couple those together. And what happens is you can then insert the mag into the mag well with either one. Like one of them's higher, and then on the other side, the lower one goes in, and the higher portion sticks up almost to the chamber height. I want to say it's a pretty neat design, okay? But they're usually a third piece that's added to that, where you've got one mag, two mags, and then a coupler between them to make that staggered AR-15 mag, okay? Well, now there's a company called the ETS Group, and they make polymer mags, and you see more and more. I have polymer mags. I have polymer MagTech mags and some other brands. I have aluminum and steel mags, but the polymer ones are like for AKs and ARs and stuff like that. And so this company came out with these polymer mags, and they have a coupler built into the side. On one side is a male coupler, and on the other side is a female coupler. And what you do is you take them like you could not ask the new Supreme Court judge which one is male or female or which one's a woman or male. She couldn't understand because she's not a biologist, okay? However, I understand, just like male and female electrical plugs or hydraulic fittings, okay? There's the boy part and the girl part, okay? That's how it works, Supreme Court Judge Ketanjali Brown Jackson. There's a boy part and a girl part, okay? So you have these two mags, and they have these circular couplers built into them. You turn it 90 degrees, put them together, and turn them back, and they go click into position. What a neat idea. And you don't have to use them you can use them as a single mag or as a coupled mag, okay? And the company is called ETS, Elite Tactical Systems Group, ETS Group, and they make these AR-15 coupler mags, and they are really cool. And so I want to say, every once in a while I'll find a product that I think is cool. I think I'm going to have to get a set of these just to try them. You never can have too many mags. If you've got four or five AR-15 mags, you haven't even started yet, okay? So if you've got 30 or 40, then you're talking, okay? So at any rate, you can never have too many. So this ETS group, or it's called Elite, let me go back to it again. It is called Elite Tactical Systems Group, AR-15 coupler mags. They're about, let me look to see, I think they're like $30 a piece, $29 a piece. Maybe a little more expensive than some of the cheaper off-brand mags, but certainly not out of line with MagTech ones and stuff like that, MagPole ones, stuff like that. So they make them in 223 and 556. They will work in Hellions and other bullpup designs. Let's see. I don't see a price right now, darn it. Okay. Speaking of prices, New York has got a great idea on how they're going to fix gun violence, and that is they're going to add a tax per round on their bullets. So that'll help, and it'll be 5 cents for every round larger than 22 and two cents on 22 and smaller. So, you know, you go, oh, geez, well, out of a 50-round box of 22, that'll be another buck on it. Yeah, But remember, that used to be a 50-round box of 22 was a buck, period, or 79 cents, okay? So now this extra tax they want to add on top of the sales tax and stuff like that is all just additive to it. And the whole idea, well, you know, it's a good idea to do this because and by the way, Robertson is the one where they have the excise tax on a 10 and 11% excise tax on all guns and ammo. Well, you know what? That goes to conservation, okay? That's not saying that we're going to have anti-gun violence and we're going to – matter of fact, there was a – I don't even think I've got it on here. There was a senator that came out this week that wants to replace all of the Border Patrol people with civilianized people because we don't need law enforcement for that. And that's just intimidating, and it's mean to have law enforcement be the Border Patrol. They should be civilians. Where are they going to get these civilians to do this stuff, okay? By the way, you know, look at Kenosha, look at Milwaukee, look at some of the other – everybody's scrambling. We want cops back. We want cops. We want police officers and law enforcement. We don't want social workers, unarmed social workers. How's that going to work for you? Let's see. Ain't it a peach? Georgia to become the 25th permitless carry state. They just got to have their governor sign it. So assuming he has said he's going to sign it, so they will be the he will, when he does, be the 25th, the midpoint of the country. So that's pretty cool. March, NICS numbers are still the third strongest on record for March. So after 20, 21, and now 22, we are still in record territory for our firearm sales. And there's no end in sight. Now, even if they're talking about, besides from trying to put insurance policy requirements in San Jose, and they want to eliminate and say, well, you can't have it so that gun companies are not cannot be sued. They're not liable for the use of their guns. You know, everybody should be able to get sued. Car companies can get sued. No, product companies can get sued when they make a defective product. Not when they're making a product that's used for its intended purposes. So if you start saying, well, this guy had a stolen Glock and he just went and shot up the bank in a party store with it, okay, and Glock is responsible for that. Well, it was stolen. Well, they should have known that a guy was going to steal it, and they did not market it well enough that people would keep them locked up and stuff. No. You cannot sue a company for a product that is used for its intended purpose. And any other effort to do that is just to try to put the company out of business. Keep doing that. Yeah, let's see. How about if we could sue politicians who aren't doing their intended purposes, like protecting the country, protecting the borders, balancing the budget, that would be good. And how about upholding the Constitution? How about if we can sue lawmakers who don't do their intended purpose? Let's try a countersuit on that. What do you say? Oh, gosh. I had some more stories about pros and cons of pistol-mounted lights. We'll get to that next week. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at WHAM Talk 1692.7 FM. I'll see you next week.